Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Evan.
Hello,
and we're here with my and our father Scott O'Hara.
Hello.
Hey. All right, Evan, what do you got for us today?
I got two, actually.
Oh, nice.
One's off the cuff. See if I can remember it. On Duncan Trussell's Family Hour. You ever listen to that podcast?
Never heard.
He's
of
a comedian, but he had a
Duncan Trussell.
He had a podcast with his mom. And then later on, he talked about it, like, if you ever get a chance to do a podcast with one of your parents, definitely do it, because then you can look back on it and enjoy it, because most people either don't, you're not going to sit down and just talk, like, ask your parents questions for an hour. It's kind of a weird thing. So that was him saying that, so that's kind of a quote.
All right.
And the other is, don't wait for everything to be perfect before you decide to enjoy your life.
Too.
That's good.
Don't hold your breath waiting for that one.
Right, exactly.
So many times you're like, all right, well, I get this and this.
Yeah.
And then maybe if we get this, and like it'll be cool.
Right.
Then we can start doing the things. It's like,
right.
No, just do it now because this is it.
Yeah. I think that's the basis of like a midlife crisis. Because guys get to the middle of their life and they're like, oh, I've been waiting to do these things. You know, like I should have had all these things done, but I haven't done them yet. Like, oh, what am I going to do? Now I got to get the crazy fast car or, you know, like, yeah. I like
makes
that.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. With all the us four boys, I think you're constantly like trying to figure out, get everyone together, get everyone to do stuff. But we were always doing things.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I feel like we weren't waiting around. We always had things to do, and let's go do this, and it's now. You're not waiting for what it's going to be. It's now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, I think there will always be something to strive for, but you can't, like that quote says, you can't just wait for that to happen to get on with your life. You got to figure out what you have in the moment and do that. Like, I think, a lot of people ask me, you know, like, am I going to like go full time, or are we going to go full time with YouTube and, you know, or you should try this. You should do this full time. You should make these more often. You should sell these. And I'm like, well, I don't have the time for that because I'm already doing these other things. And I also want to spend time with my family. You know, like I can't right. just like push and not have time with my family. I only have 5 more years with Corinne before she leaves for college.
Mm. Yeah. And then 15, and then she'll have you on her podcast.
Right.
You have to have your priorities.
Right.
Like you say, your family is way up on your list, and that's what's important to you. And, you know, work is work and your family's family. And, you know, they always say God, family, you know, work, whatever from there on. But I think it's important that you put everything in perspective. Yeah. Since you now, both of you have, you know, have families children. Of yeah. your own. And that when you wake up in the morning, it's like, wow, I'm a dad. This is cool, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Just be happy with what you have and get on with living. Like, all right, well, let's go do something.
Yeah, right.
We got it right here. We got the things that you really want and should want and need as a happy family.
So count your blessings.
Stephen DeForest just had a little baby girl yesterday.
Yeah, congrats. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah, I posted on Instagram. Oh, man, congrats to him. First girl. One. That's crazy, you know. Mm. Yeah, there's nothing like, there's just nothing better than family, and there's nothing better than children. You know, so. Yep. That's
4 fantastic sons.
Right, well, that's a given.
Yeah, we actually
I'm blessed. Yeah, good boys.
Had Christmas and we all were together up at mom and dad's place. And that was really nice. I like, I didn't think about it till later, but it's, we all see each other often, but not often are we all together at the same time with our families, with all the children. Like,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe in the grand scheme of it, like compared to other families, we do it often enough, but it was really nice to have all the nephews and nieces there and all the, you know, the cousins and parents and children. And yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. It's very, very nice and fun. And, you know, it's, and we all get along.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a good thing too.
That is a blessing.
Oh, I got a, so speaking of like a lot of cookies and things.
Yeah.
I got a present for Dad.
Oh, all right. He's walking away from the mics.
Here it comes.
So we do, I think we may have talked about this, but we do a Secret Santa exchange for gifts for the brothers and sister-in-laws. And then we also usually will do like a family. We all make different cookies. And
how many stories are written about me? Burger cookies.
So that's just a little treat. I swung by Highs. I was like, oh, I'll get Dad something for coming by and helping us on our podcast.
Devin would always tell me how all the boys would get one and I would hide the rest.
Yeah,
right. Put them in my bedroom so they wouldn't get any more. So burger cookies.
Burger cookies are a Baltimore-based bakery, Burger, B-E-R-G-E-R. Mm. And burger cookie is like a half a, what is it, like what's the, it's...
Shortbread cookie?
Yeah, shortbread. Yeah, right, mm-hmm. So it's a shortbread cookie with a just an equally amount of chocolate frosting on top.
More so chocolate.
Yeah, more chocolate fudge. Hand
dipped on each one.
Yeah.
They're crazy.
They're great.
We went to, I took my students to Lexington Market recently, which is an indoor market in Baltimore City. And they had burger cookies at one of the booths. There was like a, you know, a bakery booth and they had burger cookies. And so my co-teacher, Katie, actually bought some for all the students, for all of our students. It was like 20 something students. And, like, I don't know about shockingly, but so many of the students ate like two or three or four bites and then just threw away the rest.
Really?
They're like, it's just too much. They couldn't do it. It's like too chocolatey.
They are.
And I agree. They're definitely very rich, but I'm not going to throw one away. I know. I was like watching them. They're just like wrap it up and they're in the napkin and just toss it. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is like classic tradition here.
That's sacrilege.
I know. Yeah. And Devin brought them out. Or like we, mom and dad, I guess we would always, not always, but would get them when we were kids, but it was a treat, you know. It was something special, so they'd come back with a box of burger cookies.
We'd usually get, it was like a dessert we'd get from Parmesan. It was the pizza place, right?
That's it.
Okay.
My sweet tooth, I remember these.
You remember where they came from?
These are my first memories. Yes. Burger cookies up on like the middle shelf, like stacked up high. Uh-huh. And we'd get them, but yeah, we would all get one, and then there was only a few left, so Dad would, the box would disappear, and it would never return. You know,
because what is it, like 10 in there or something? So
probably less.
Yeah, I don't know, 8 maybe.
And they're pretty expensive,
right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, back then I'm sure they were, but they were still probably high back then. So it's, that pack is like, well, it depends. You go to a gas station some more.
Yeah,
but I'd say the average is about $6.
Right. Yeah.
For a pack of burger cookies.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I think they're what, like $1.79 for one of them if you buy
a box. Right. So don't spit it out.
Yeah,
I know. You owe me 50 cents.
I know. Like, what are you doing? Fortunately, I didn't buy them, but I felt bad for Katie.
it's like $300 worth of cookies.
What are you doing? Yeah, like 20-some students. And and from a bakery in Lexington Market, I'm sure, you know, she bought them individually. And you know? I was like...
we had, I guess, people were bringing in different things when I worked for the Redskins in the control room. Mm-hmm. It was actually a nice thing. The producer would bring in a lot of snacks, which is a huge thing.
Yeah.
As Dad knows, we can get into that. Dad, it's pretty much why I got into video production. But
right.
Not having food will piss a whole crew off.
Right.
So if all you do is spend a little money out of the grand scheme of things, $30 worth of snacks is a drop in the bucket of how much you're spending. And your whole crew will be 50% happier.
Yeah.
So he would always bring in a bunch of good snacks. Nice. And everyone was always like, whatever you wanted. So someone brought up burger cookies and no one had them. So I brought them down and they were hit.
Nice.
There's only eight or nine of them.
That's awesome.
Got to have food.
Yeah. There you go. That's part of the, you know, don't wait to live your life. eat good food. You know, it's like, I don't know if it's the reason why I drink beer, but I don't. Like when I decide, like often I will cut back on sweets or cut back on bread, you know, in different times to like try to lose a little bit of weight. And People are always like, "Oh, you're gonna stop drinking beer?" I'm like, "No."
I used to say it too, like, that doesn't count in
the day. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Like, I'll cut back. It's easier to cut back on other things, and I could stop drinking. But I drink beer because I really enjoy the taste of beer. It's the same reason why I drink coffee. Like, I don't drink coffee because it wakes me up. I drink coffee because I love the taste of it. Mm-hmm. And that was something I definitely got from you. The taste of coffee that I like to drink is, like, I usually, like, a cup of coffee, I'll put like a scoop of sugar in and then cream, whatever that is, like half and half or almond milk or something, because that smell and taste is what's nostalgic to me from growing up and what you, when I would smell and taste your coffee when I was a kid, because it was always had cream and sugar in it. So that's like that's what I enjoy. That's part of the, like, it's warm, and I'm sure, like, there is some of the, like, there is the addicting quality of caffeine in the morning, and it does something for me. There's a reason why when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is go and make a cup of coffee, not only because I love the taste, but you know, there have been days where I'll go like a week or something without drinking coffee, and I'm always fine. But
so when we were kids, you were sneaking Dad's coffee.
Oh yeah,
and Drew was sneaking Dad's cigarettes. Okay.
Everybody else
each got a vice. Yeah. I got the sugar. We all got the gambling. That's fun.
I know. Yeah. The last couple of years, Mom has started to make a pot of coffee in the morning for me. She never did before, but it's something newer. And man, I love waking up. Smell that. Smell of a pot of coffee. Yeah. It's like, oh, wake me up.
It's the small things, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could have been doing this my whole life. What happened? It's just like, well.
So we want to talk about, obviously, the things you did, Dad, that now influenced us and I, what we're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I want to ask, I was thinking about on the drive here, you're not a city boy when you grew up, but you're in Parkville, Maryland. People don't know. It's a lot of row homes, and it's like right on the edge of the city, so it's not...
It's suburban.
Suburbia.
A little bit.
Absolutely.
So you went from that to, like, meeting Mom, and then Mom was country. It's only 15 minutes away from Parkville, but it's a different world, really.
Yeah, farm country.
So you going from Parkville to Glen Arm, what was your feeling? I mean, you felt like you hit the jackpot. Mom wasn't rich, but you went from a row home to a 35-acre farm.
33.
So in like 10 years, you're doing that, and then all of a sudden you got a bunch of boys, and you're like riding a tractor around. Yeah. What was that like? Was that it's a great thing.
But. It was, you know how you wish when you're a little kid, you know, I would like to have this, or you know, anything you make a wish on. I always wanted to have a horse. Mm-hmm. So that came into fruition. But, you know, so we had horses. And I remember when I first met your mom, we met at a place where we all used to go swimming together. And somebody told me who she was, and we talked. She still didn't remember me from that day. But I said, that girl has that really cool farm that's like up off the road in Glen Arm. I want to get together with her. I like her. Yeah, she's very nice. And it all came to pass.
Yeah.
You just never know how things are going to go. Like I say, I was basically a city guy, you know.
Yeah.
Row house was a row house, you know. Mm-hmm. I was a Baltimore Hun.
Right. But,
well, yeah. It was a really cool. When we got married, we didn't think we were going to be on the farm.
Right.
And when your brother Derek was born, your grandfather said, "There's a mobile home on the farm. We're not going to rent it out anymore. Would you like to be interested in maybe living in it?" We were like, "Heck yeah!"
Yeah,
right. And then we moved from there to get. We bought that, and then we moved to the big house. Yeah.
Did Granddaddy? Did they charge you any rent for the trailer?
Actually, we bought the trailer from the folks who had rented the farm. So we bought it from them. Yeah.
Okay.
So we didn't get rent on that.
Right.
But we both, Mom and I and Aunt Jill, there was two trailers on the property.
Right.
We both bought a trailer. Okay. So It was great. And
yeah,
then it just worked out that we could, other folks who had rented the big house were ready to move.
Right.
So we were ready to move in. Our family's getting bigger and bigger. We had three boys and a trailer, and it was like, I think it's time to move into the big house. So we did, and you know, it was a great 14 years, I guess, something like that.
Jeez.
But it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I wish we could have bought it, but at that point in time, we couldn't afford to buy it.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And now no one can afford to buy it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So when you, like, as a maker, as a person, you know, who makes things and does stuff, like, you're very much DIY minded. Like, how do I do this myself first? And mm-hmm. then if I can't do it, then I'll figure out a way to maybe, you know, figure out a way to make it or find someone who can do it for me. When you moved into the farm, did you end up doing a lot more stuff on the farm in that mindset, like making your own things, doing your own things, or was that just something? I mean, I know that's something that you grew up as, like, you were always interested in cars and working on cars, and I think, you know, that did that affinity for doing stuff yourself, did that happen once you got older, or was that something that happened when you were younger?
Well, I was definitely into cars.
Yeah.
I loved cars, you know, fast cars. It was muscle cars. That's what you did back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Cars were cool. So I knew cars. I worked construction for a couple different companies, a plumbing company, a construction company, underground utility company. So I sort of, you know, you become a
jack of all trades.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there was no Google to look it up then.
Right.
So you had to basically ask somebody. If you didn't know something about plumbing, you would find a plumber and talk to him about it, call him on the phone.
Right.
So, you know, you just sort of trial and error.
Right.
So, so from there, let's go back way before the farm. Let's go all the way back, because we're always asking, like, people, how'd you get into the mindset of it?
Right.
And, like, your real dad, our real grandfather, died when you were young, when you were three?
3 months.
Three months. Right. Jeez. Right.
Yeah.
So you never knew him. And then Pop wasn't necessarily handy that I remembered.
Not at all.
Right. Yeah. He's a guy who'll just call someone in.
Right. And that was our grandmother remarried when you were about a year and a half or something, right?
Yeah, a couple years old, maybe two.
So, right. So, Pop was the only father you ever knew, and he was obviously the only grandfather we ever knew. You know, he was always a great grandfather. But like you said, he wasn't like a maker guy. He wasn't a handy guy. So, did you have to do some of that stuff around the house? Did you learn it from Uncle Dick? Because Uncle Dick is, 10 years older than you, right?
No. My brother didn't do any of that.
Okay.
I learned from people around, maybe somebody in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
There was Mr. Bud, who lived three or four doors down from us.
Right.
Mr. Bud had polio, so he didn't have the use of his hands, but he could do anything with his feet. It was amazing. He could turn a screwdriver with his feet. He taught me a lot of things about around the house, fixing just little things that go wrong in the house. He would say, I need you to help me do this. And he would just, you know, step by step, like, take this tool out of this drawer and give it here, do this, do that. I got to the point where I was rebuilding his iron lung every year because, you know, he had to have his iron lung to breathe because his diaphragm was gone from polio. So it was just kind of like, those kind of things you just learn as you go. And on the farm, it was the same thing. And it's broken. Let's figure out how to fix it.
Right. There's no other option.
Right. Yeah.
So you learn how to put in a new light switch with your big toe. You're like, I'm
probably
really good.
Could have.
I'm good with my heels.
Yeah. It was pretty incredible. I heard something actually this morning. A guy on the radio said, people of my age or the end of, or the beginning of people who dealt with computers and smart devices and all, because we didn't have any of that.
Right.
It's just, even back into the 90s, the computers were there, but they were real high end.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, so we didn't have those type of things, which is, it really made me think about that today.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We were
yeah.
the end of the people who didn't have it. You guys have it. Your right. kids will have. What will they have? What's next?
Yeah.
You know?
I think about that. We talk about that too. Like we were in that transition time where we grew up without smartphones mm-hmm. and without really technology. I mean, I guess like when we were like we had a computer when we were in elementary school and then into middle school, but it wasn't like it is now where you can, everything is there. It was like, hey, you could maybe do a chat room or you could play a game on it, but the internet wasn't fast enough for really like, so we would, you know, in high school, we'd still go to the library and look, you know, get books and stuff yeah. and like, you know, and then it wasn't until college that I even got a cell phone and then not a smartphone until after grad school.
And for years, if you were on the internet, the dial up, the phone wouldn't work.
Right.
So it was like a countdown. Like, what do you need it for? Why? Like, all right, well, you can do it right now, but you have it for like 20 minutes.
Right. What if someone calls?
Yeah. Then no one wouldn't go through.
Yeah, right.
So that was it. You were on and off. You did what you needed to do.
Right.
And here we are doing a broadcast.
Yeah, right.
You know, on the computer.
Yeah.
Go figure.
And that everyone all over the world will be able to hear it, you know, yep. if they want to.
That's pretty incredible.
In a split second. Yeah. Yeah, it is crazy.
I always said that I had a face for radio.
Nice. Yeah, so you know, with other people in the neighborhood, you said Mr. Bud, was there also, like, I know you had different friends who had, like, fathers who were also, like, handy. Would you learn stuff from them or, you know, and kind of acquire that knowledge over the years from different
people? Yeah, I guess some, who were the car guys?
Pootie. Who lived directly across the street. Pootie and Jan. Everybody called him Pootie. I don't even know his real name. But Pootie was a mechanic. Oh, so if you were over there turning a wrench, Pootie would come across the street and say, you should do this and this and this. Right. But there was no, you'd have to plug your computer. You had a carburetor and spark plugs, and that was it.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the few old trucks I've had, like 80s trucks, are great.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
wide open. It's like
the engine.
It's almost
huge.
Like a diagram of what a car truck engine would be.
Yeah, right.
It's like, this is this. It's so now everything's just packed tight.
Yeah. You can see everything. Yeah, yeah. Here's the spark plugs, and I can get to them.
Right.
Yep. You know, yeah, and here's right. Here's the air filter. Just unscrew the top and put it on there. So,
yeah, I'm not really a car guy, but. With same thing with the truck, the 89 F-150, when I got that, the alternator, I needed to change that pretty early on, and that was, like, super easy. It was, like, right there. Just bought a new one, put that one in. And then there was one day where I started the truck, and I was putting on the throttle, and there was no gas. You know, I wasn't getting any throttle. I'm like, what the heck? So I'm like, it's got to be something. It felt loose. Like, it didn't feel like there wasn't compression. It felt like there was something loose. I was like, all right, so let me use my mind, you know, open up the engine compartment, look in there, and I follow, you know, I kind of go from where the gas pedal is, and I kind of follow a cable up to the top where I know the actual throttle body is or whatever up top. And like, I'm like looking at that and looking at, okay, well, this clips in here. And there was like a little clip that had just like popped off. And so the actual throttle cable wasn't attached. So it wasn't, so I'm like, nothing's actually there. So I clipped it back on, went in, turned on the truck, started right up. I was like, yeah, I figured it out. But again, that's like that type of engine that is, you know, it was all right there. I could see it. Yeah, I could follow it up.
It makes sense.
Know?
It's like that Seinfeld joke where he's like, you know, you get out of the car, your girl's in the car, you know, we put the hood up first thing. That's nice, because so they can't see that we don't know what we're doing. And then he's like, I'm just looking for something unplugged or an on off switch
that I
switched off,
switch, turned back on.
Got it.
I could do that.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm looking at.
The new cars, I think I'm looking for a fuse.
Yeah, because right.
You know, I don't know what else. You know, you got to have something to plug in to figure out what's wrong.
First time I had to jump start the hybrid, which is weird because they have a huge battery in the bottom of the car that always has juice in it. So why can't you use that to jump the car?
Right, exactly.
But it runs out because it only uses its tiny little battery. It's like a smaller battery than normal.
Oh, yeah.
And you had to, like, the ground was somewhere different. Like, you couldn't just, it was, so I had to, like, I was, like, reading the manual, and it's covered up with plastic, so you're, like, unsnapping plastic pieces before you can even get to the battery. But there's a giant battery under the car. We should always have a start. Like, what are we doing?
I had to change a headlight bulb with Sam's truck.
Yeah.
It was a, you know, 05, 06 Chevy.
Oh man, that's
a,
yeah.
I had to go online.
Yeah.
I got to change a light bulb.
You got to take the muffler off.
Yeah, right.
Ended up there was like these two clips. You popped them up and the whole light came right out. It was real easy, but
you got
to
know.
I was like,
right.
You have to know it.
Yeah.
I would have taken the battery out and, it was, you just.
Well, I did that when I got the Ram that I have now. I bought new headlights for it because they were just old and like that water had gotten inside. So I bought new headlights, not just the bulb, but the whole new lights. And I was looking up on how to put them together and how to, and it was like a ton of work just to be able to put the headlights on. And so when I had Jerry work on the truck, I was like, hey, can you put these headlights on for me? And he was like, okay, sure. And then afterward, he was like, those took me longer than the whole job that I had to do just getting those headlights on. I was like, oh, thank
Crazy.
You. So I gave him an extra $100.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah, just that I guess having that mindset of trying to do it yourself first is definitely something that I got from you. It was like, oh, like, because it was always that. It was like, oh, let's, we'll figure out how to do it. And then, you always had the knowledge of doing the stuff around the house. It was like, oh, yeah, make sure to do this. It's all the little things, even with like the smithy build when I like did the tar paper the wrong way. You're like, oh, you should have done it, across so it's overlapping coming down. I was like, oh, duh, that's so easy. Like, of course, that's what it's supposed to be.
All right.
But hey, right, pizza's here.
Pizza's here.
Pizza.
All right, so we're
the most pretty person in this
hunger.
Whole
hey, right, Dad. Still cold in the shop, but Nicole brought some pizza down, which we all enjoyed.
Right
back to the conversation. I was mentioning the smithy build and how you had the trick of the tar paper, which I didn't know. So that actually was that. That's the first video that you were on with us, right, Dad?
I believe so.
Yeah, because so if you haven't seen the smithy build video, you got to check it out if you want to see Dad. If you haven't seen him yet, you can see he was there for most of the days helping out, except for the one morning where I started without him and then got there and he's like, your tar paper's on sideways. Man, dang, I should have just waited like an hour. But no, that was fun. It was fun to have you there because there was like a lot of knowledge just in that type of thing, that like building knowledge that you gain by experience.
Right.
And and we've built stuff like that, like the porch, you had the two porches on your house, which now is Devin's house.
Mm-hmm.
Which we all helped to build.
And three sheds.
Which I didn't know I was investing in.
Yeah,
putting
right.
all that stuff in.
If you would have known.
See, being a good son pays off.
Yeah, right.
There you
exactly.
go.
You help whenever your dad asks for it.
Yeah.
The day the shaky walls story. You should tell that one, Devin.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first shed.
We were putting up.
And we had the floor on, and we were putting up the walls. I stepped in and I felt like a shifting, like a movement.
Right.
And like, I think three of the walls were up. So it was like, it should have been tight. I was like, man, it's really kind of wobbly, Dad. Like, I'm feeling like I'm just walking. It's kind of wobbling. He's like, well, no, it's fine. What are you talking about?
I was on my knees working.
Right. And then like an hour later, we're listening to the radio. And they're like, if you felt that, that was an earthquake.
Oh man!
So I thought it was wobbling when I stepped on it. It just happened to be a slight earthquake.
Yep.
Which in Maryland we do not get.
I thought, what did I do wrong? It all braced real nice.
Like, it should be fine. I don't know. I'm like, all right, well, yeah, whatever.
Right, you didn't keep feeling it.
I mean, you're like, I guess.
Yeah, and then I think when I was up in New Hampshire in grad school, that's when you guys took down the old shed, and then. Mm-hmm. Because I remember I saw pictures of, like, you or Derek or somebody standing up in the loft, like, standing out the hole.
I took
roof.
Some nice film
yeah,
with the
right,
Nikon.
Yeah, right.
That's when Derek
nice
went
photos.
Through the roof, didn't he? Or from the floor. they were taking that old, decrepit old thing.
Yeah.
And he went right through the floor. And he was just sticking out on the top of the roof.
And then they cut their way out of the top.
Yeah,
and
right.
And we pulled it down. And
yeah. You like hook it up to a truck or something and pull it down
that
way.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is fun. We did that once with my truck when you and I, Dad, were there. We went to get that like barn up north of wherever that was, like
New Freedom
or whatever, right on that corner. And we hooked up my truck to that barn and pulled it down.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Wait, I did that on the, we did that in Westminster.
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
There's a lot of barns.
On another
because we're
building.
Like we're disassembling it, and of course, I mean, the reason Dad goes to these places is to get a bunch of the old wood and stuff. So mm-hmm. you really want to be careful, but eventually you go like Oh my gosh, this is
all right. As much as we can get, it's gonna take forever.
We've been here for hours and we're not getting much. Like, all right, let's yank it down and then see what we can pull off.
We'll start taking it apart.
And that was right when I got my truck.
Yeah,
it's brand new, and I had these images of like me pulling and something flying through the back window. But I also really wanted to do it. So I'm like, tie it up, let's go. I think we flipped the whole thing over. Like, went and like we put it over top, so like it came it all the way over. Down. Yeah.
Dang, nice. Throw the chain over.
So yeah, so we go from that, go from the city life and cars. Then we move to the farm, which, like I said, it was 15 minutes away, but it's a really beautiful country in Baltimore County, and it was Mom's parents' farm,
right?
And then Granddaddy's parents built it, or who built the farm
before that?
No,
it was three generations.
Because it wasn't the farm 100 years old in the 90s, so it was born in when was it, in the house late 1800s?
House was built in the big farmhouse, 1899, I believe.
Okay.
And then there was the little house, you know, where the garage was, over the other house with the hooked up to the honey house.
Okay, right. Yeah.
It was maybe older. I'm not sure. I think they rebuilt several things, but it had been there for, you know, three generations or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Because I think it was Mom's great grandfather, or maybe great grandfather, great great. It makes it our great, great, great. I think it's the three greats that makes our, who built the farmhouse.
We'll have Mom on and get the exact details next.
I think it was
Mom's. Maybe it's more.
Your grandfather's grandfather.
Right.
Really?
Which would make it. Right. Which would make it Mom's great grandfather. So maybe it was.
It wasn't Gramp. I think it was what they call Granther. They called him. Okay. I think that was. That was three generations.
That's why I want my grandchildren to call me.
Mom would have to, you know, tell me the truth on that one.
Right.
I think that's
Grenther it was. So, yeah, so you get access to this huge farm, and most of it was leased off for corn, and right? So some farmers around.
We had it.
Right, they had the big fields. And then you and Mom were basically, you would board horses.
Yep.
And that was your main farm activity.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That was the way that paid the rent.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and Mom was a stay-at-home housewife, too. But she did work. You know, she usually worked night work. She waited tables a couple different places, and she worked as a dental assistant for a while.
Right.
But, you know, it filled in the money we needed.
Right. So was that going on as when you guys were in the trailer, or did you start boarding horses after that?
We started after that.
Did Mom, like, say, hey, I can... Obviously, our mom grew up at the farm with horses. I mean, she had her own pony, so she knew she's a horse lady.
Right.
So did she suggest it, or did you guys just go...
Well, if I recall, the people who rented it, the big house, before they moved... They had horses, and then we got a horse. Mm-hmm. And then we realized that we could make some money boarding horses because Mom had the knowledge, and I could work a pitchfork and muck a stall with the best of them.
Yeah.
So
you had the knowledge and the space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we had 1, 2, 3, 4. I think we had like 5 stalls.
Right.
So we could do that.
Yeah, my earliest memories are of the boys, since I'm the youngest brother, them having to go out and do those chores. And me being relieved I didn't have to. I remember that. I would stay in, like, all right, go. And it was just me, like, all right, see ya.
Our first boarding was racehorses. Mm. We had 3 mares. And a stud.
Wow.
And the stud had to be separated from mares all the time.
Right.
That was a race owner. He was pretty much absent all the time.
Right.
He always paid the bills. But that's how it... I don't remember how it came to to fruition, but that's what started it all with the boarding. Right. And then we had those horses, and then we decided we should go with, you know, more personal pleasure horses with folks. Right. And that way, and have weekends off. You know, we would tell people, we'll take care of everything until the weekend comes, and then you come and muck your own stalls. And then we picked up a couple other folks, Mom got a horse, and then you remember Jim, old Jim.
Yeah, Jim Calhoun.
Moved in. He rented a trailer from us, and he had an old quarter horse.
Boy. Boy was the best.
He was a great horse. Such a good horse. Everybody could ride Boy.
So did Jim come because of the horse? Or do you remember did he start living at the farm because of the horse?
I think they were looking for a place to board the horse.
Right.
I don't remember. Mom could probably fill you in on that one. Yeah. I don't know for sure. I just remember they rented Aunt Jill's trailer.
Yeah.
And probably because maybe she advertised it.
Right. Okay.
You know, about we're looking for a place and, you know, if you have a horse we have a farm.
Yeah.
And so.
And was Aunt Jill living in the farm, in the honey house at the time?
When Jim moved in. They moved. She moved to the honey house and we were in the big house.
Right. Yeah. So on our farm, we had the main farmhouse, and then there was a honey house that my grandfather was a beekeeper. And so he, you know, also made honey. And so there was a full honey house, and then attached to the honey house was a garage. And then above the garage was an apartment that was two bedroom maybe, or just
two bedroom.
Yeah.
That was your mom's grandparents' house.
Ah, okay.
As they lived there when she grew up.
Ah, okay. Right. So Aunt Jill lived there for a bunch of years when we were kids. And then, so then Jim Calhoun moved in. Was it, you said they, was it Jim and somebody else? Because I only ever remember Jim. Okay. I do remember Sun Young Jim. Yeah, I do remember, his son as well. Yeah. But okay, yeah. I didn't realize, in my mind, he was older.
And John. Actually, I think his son John moved in with him first.
Okay.
And then his youngest son, Jim Jr., moved in a little bit later Kim, and then they got married, and it's a whole story behind all
that. Did they move into the other trailer?
Nope.
Okay. So they were just there. Okay.
That was, first it was Betsy and Ron.
Okay.
You know Betsy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They rented a trailer from us.
And that was, once we moved into the big house, then you rented the trailer that we were living in. Because what do you call them? Double wides or something, right? A full home trailer, right?
Yeah, had an addition on it.
Right.
And then then Ron and Betsy found another farm to rent, a farmhouse.
Right.
further out in the country. And then Bobby.
Okay.
Remember Bobby?
Yep.
Bobby got, him and his another friend, they rented it. And then the other guy left and it was just Bobby.
Right. And then so was Bobby worked for Valley View, right? Valley View Farm?
Yeah.
Was that Bobby?
Manor View,
okay.
Yeah, actually he worked with me and, I was his boss in the city.
All right.
And then
for the city?
Went away, and then after the city he went to work for Manor View.
Okay. So that was working as a in construction for the government, right?
I was
for
the Baltimore superintendent,
City.
Yeah.
Okay.
For Baltimore City.
Right. And then doing what type of projects?
Oh, I was a superintendent of landscaping, but it was all building. It could have been brick work. It could have been concrete work. It could have been building parks, tree planting, a little bit of everything.
All right. How did you get that job?
When I left, I worked for the Board of Education, and I was a lead groundskeeper for Baltimore County Schools. And
were you at specific school or just kind of all over?
I had three schools.
Okay.
What were they? That I was in charge of. On Dumbarton. Rogers Forge. and Stoneleigh.
Okay.
So, and then I left because I just didn't feel like I was making the money I needed.
Right.
Yeah. And I went to work for Pepsi-Cola.
Okay.
And I worked for Pepsi-Cola for a year and said, this is not what I like to do. So I just happened to see there were some openings in Baltimore City. It was a new program called City Builders where you could teach young folks trades.
Okay.
And that's, you know, I went in and I basically, because I had a lot of landscaping experience, I sort of just moved right up the ladder.
Yeah.
I was a superintendent within, I don't know, 10, 12 months.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
So, because they realized I knew what I was talking about.
Right. Yeah.
And
So did you work with, you said that was like teaching youth. Did you work with students when you started off, like working with, or not students, working with kids?
Yeah, I had crews of young kids in the city who didn't have any training. Maybe they dropped out of school or just wanted to learn. We had we had a bunch of trades. You could be electrical, you could be plumbing, you could be masonry, you could be landscaping.
Right.
And I had like 6 or 7 fellas at work, on my crew. And then as it went along, I just, we had bigger projects where I would have 2 or 3 crews working with me.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, I'm running a whole project.
Right, yeah.
And then the boss is like, I'm going to make you a superintendent, and because I knew how to read blueprints and things like that.
Yeah.
So that sort of, that's how it started. And,
yeah.
You know.
So then how'd you go from doing that, which seems like a pretty good gig, a pretty good, government gig, to trying to do your own business, O'Hara and Sons Landscape?
Well, it was good. And I was doing well, and I had picked up a lot of side work, landscaping work, planting and mulching and just doing big planting jobs and stuff.
Right.
And I told your mom, I said, I think I can make a go of this just doing it as our own business. And it was the early 80s, and it was booming. I knew how to do a lot of fine grading and seeding. So I worked with a lot of contractors building new homes. I would put in new lawns.
Right.
So that turned into we need a new lawn. Can you put in a driveway? Yeah, I got a crew that I know that I used to work with. I can get these guys. We'll do concrete driveways too. And sort of it all, it was really well. Then the bottom fell out of everything. And I guess when you were a little guy in the late 80s, building just dropped out and nothing. And I said, what am I going to do? And I went out to broadcasting school and started a whole new career. And after 30 years of that, I had a very successful broadcasting career.
I think going back to O'Hara and Sons Landscaping, I always was so proud of the end Sons, because it was and I'm sure you were proud, because obviously it wasn't we didn't work with you. We were little boys, but for you, you were yes, these are my sons. It's O'Hara and Sons.
It's also good for business too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I was always yes, that's me. I am one of the end Sons. And going to jobs and carrying little plants around and stuff, and planting occasionally.
I have memories of that, going to jobs.
Yeah.
It was just, no one else is going to watch you. We're all going. Mom's going or whoever.
Right.
You just hang around and play. I remember playing in a lot of pipe and tubes. When they'd be stacked up, they'd be this is great. This is the best playground ever.
Big, corrugated plastic pipe.
Yeah, just go have fun.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And it was Anson's before Devin was born.
Oh, yeah.
So, nice. Mom was like, well, what if we have a girl? And I was like, let's not even think about that.
Impossible.
No, it was we don't make women out,
Yeah, right.
So I'm not one of the end sons, huh?
Right. You were. By default, it was already end sons before you were born.
Maybe.
You made it in. In his 3 sons.
We did think about doing, if we were to name, a business instead of Art of Craftsmanship.
Right.
We would make it, O'Hara Sons and Daughters.
Yeah, right.
Because it's like us and the sons and daughters. So maybe O'Hara and sons and daughters would be our business. Daughters,
yeah. Right. They could fit all that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. There were some cool t-shirts, too. You had the one that was like a leprechaun sitting on a toadstool, like a mushroom, smoking a pipe. That was a fun one. Good, like...
Another one with a wheelbarrow that Mom still has one of those.
Oh, and Nicole had one for a bunch of years as well. Yeah, the wheelbarrow with like a shovel and a tree coming out of it. That was a real simple one. I really like that one too. Yeah.
So we go from that, and well, let's. I don't know. We should continue to talk about the farm before we move on. I mean, I don't. You got some crazy farm stories. I know there's talking about the horses. What about that Derek story where he was?
Where he was found. Horse. Yes, it was. I don't remember if we were. I think we were in the trailer. And Derek got out of bed. I believe he was in diapers.
Right. Yeah.
And just walked out the back door down to the barnyard. And it was because the lady who rented the house before we got it, she called, and she said, "Do you realize your baby's down in the barn?" And we were like, "Oh my Lord.
You're what?" Yeah, right. What?
You know, he's not in bed. You know, it's just one of those things.
And where was he?
Down in the little upper barnyard.
But didn't...
Standing right... the horses were standing right over top of him.
Yeah, it wasn't the story that I heard, that he was just sitting under a horse.
Yeah. The horse, he was right there. The horse was right over top of him. Like, the horse was probably protecting him. They have a sense, you know.
He
wasn't going to kick it or anything.
Yeah, they're not threatened by the toddler.
Well, just went flying down and grabbed him. I may have been at work. I don't recall. Yeah.
That can happen. Yeah, I know Mavis, my daughter's climbing out a lot. She now she's climbing. If we do now, we have to put her back in a onesie because she'll take her pants and diaper off. Now I keep finding her, like, "Hey, what are you doing?" She's naked in the living room.
What are you doing?
Or climbed out, and we gave her a little Christmas tree. But she gets out, no pants on, and she starts pulling off all the things and going into the corner and like playing with them. She ripped the head off Cinderella.
Oh no!
Yeah. So yeah, they you think, you think you know. Yeah. And they don't make noise. I mean, if they're crying, then you know they're, and especially back then. And now I have a camera and audio and I have everything. And I still, all of a sudden I'm looking over, like, what the, and she's out. And like, I mean, we had to flip around the doorknob so we could lock it from the outside.
Nice.
So she opens the door and tries to escape.
Oh man.
Oh my.
That's great.
So from the farm, any other farm stories? Are we going to go
the door? And the trailers.
Oh, knocking the door.
All three of the boys. You may have been an infant, but mom was taking a nap. Devin, I think I was at work.
We were in the big house when Devin was born.
Right.
Because I remember having conversations. I have a vivid memory of being in the living room. Because in my mind, I can see, I'm looking at like the roll top desk and the stairs from the cat, from the chairs, and having a conversation about Devin's sex. Or no, I'm sorry, his name. We're going to decide what sex you were. Is he going to be boy or girl? No, his name. I remember us because he was born. And his name was Adam when he was born.
For a while.
The people in the podcast know this story. Devin was not a Devin. He was an Adam for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm.
A couple months.
Oh, a couple months.
2 months.
Dang, that's crazy. And I guess you and Mom, you got a lot of questions of like, really? You named him Adam and not a D name because Derek Drew Dustin and Adam. he's younger and he's got a different name. Like, really? Really? So the conversation went. And then I guess you and Mom just hadn't found a good D name.
No, we had girl names and really didn't have a good D good name. One. So.
And you liked Adam. Yeah. Which Adam's a great name.
Adam, yes. The first.
But right, exactly. So then I guess how did you guys find Devin?
It was on Knight Rider.
The show Knight
Rider.
Right.
The coloring book.
Yeah.
It was one of you guys had a
Devin
book.
Was the boss of Michael Knight.
Michael Knight, from Knight Rider. That's right. David
coloring book. David, it was like you saw Devin, that's a great D name. And then
you start to like it.
You can change a name to up to 6 months
right.
of a child if you want to. And then we all became, we did a little family vote on it.
And yeah, yeah, that's, I have that memory, that vivid memory of sitting mm-hmm. there and voting. And right, because at the time there were five of us to vote, right? So it was yep. like a good odd number. So you had to have, you know, we yeah. three on two. So it was a, you and, it was me and Drew and Mom that voted for
like
Devin.
And Derek and Derek I
voted for Adam.
Said stay with Adam. But
and there you go.
We got outvoted, and now you're Devin.
Yeah, I'm Devin. And I never lived in the trailer because I'm not trailer trash. All right. I'm quality. I live in the big house. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, your life is not over you're yet.
Never, yeah, I might get knocked back down.
You should be so lucky to live on the farm on a trailer. Oh, it's man, wonderful.
It's beautiful. That is true. I mean, I've lived on a.
I felt very fortunate to live on that farm.
It's all about location, 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 right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
And it was mine. The trailer was mine. Nobody could take it. I wasn't paying ground rent like you do on like a trailer park, you know?
Yeah.
So,
quick interruption. This pretzel beer is not good.
Well, I have four of them because Nicole's cousin Dan, who we went up to visit after Christmas, didn't like them enough that he was going to pour them down the drain.
That's why I gave
and he asked
away.
Me, he was like, do you want these pretzel beers? I was like, yeah, I'll take them.
So he doesn't even tell me this story before he hands it to me. He's like, you want some of this?
You want a pretzel beer? You're like, yeah, sure.
I was like, ooh, pretzels. Old, dirty pretzels.
Dan said, I got somebody I can dump these beers on.
Again. No, I think it's all right. It's got the, it's like a bready saltiness that, is Devin's face. It's not good. I think they're fine. I mean, I think they're not great. I wasn't going to let him pour them down the drain.
They're not great.
So we moved from the farm when, I guess I was 10, we moved from the farm. That would have been, I was in fifth grade, and Devin, you were in first grade.
So I was six or five.
Yeah. Did you, so when did you go back, when did you go to school to go to BIM? This is Broadcasting Institute of Maryland.
91.
Okay.
Which no longer exists.
Right.
Yeah. School. Yeah. Yeah, it was 91. I graduated in 92. Yeah. And then I went to work.
Right. So what got you into that? Like, how'd you go from doing, you know, being a superintendent on like landscaping having your own business. Company like having the landscaping business to going into video production.
Well, the business was kind of slow and I had four kids to feed and things were not working well, so it was in the newspaper.
Oh, really?
How about a career in broadcasting? Call blah blah blah, you know, and I called the number. And I went to school. I qualified to get a Pell Grant and some guaranteed student loans.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. I had a job before I graduated from the school.
Oh, that's cool.
So
yeah. Yeah, there's a it was just in the paper, so you thought that'd be interesting. Did you have any interest in it though?
Well, you know, I played music, for a long time. I played music in a band, and,
right? Yeah.
I loved entertainment business, and I knew audio, because of that,
right?
And I thought, man, worst come to worst, you know, maybe it's a fallback on that. But then you could either major in TV or radio, but you didn't have to declare your major until you were, you know, a month in. So I went in and I thought, I want to do the TV thing because that's where the money is.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know, there's not a lot of money in radio, and probably even more so now. There's not a whole lot of money in it, but there was tons of money in TV. And I said, that's what I need. Tons of money.
Yeah, right.
Wherever the money is, whatever.
Well, it was very little money when I started, but I worked my way up.
Yeah. So then you had, so you went to school, and then you said you got a job right out of school, so you started working at Producers.
Actually, I worked for another place called Modern World Media.
Okay.
And I worked for Joel, was his name, for I guess about... 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah. And then a girl I know, Bonnie McCauzy. I was doing some freelance stuff and just, you know, internships for Comcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Bonnie called me and said, would you be interested in working in a good high-end production house?
Yeah.
And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
right. She said, I'll pass your name on. And I got hired on the spot.
Nice.
At producers.
Right.
Worked in the tape room, worked my way up into the studio, shooting, lighting. And then from there, the TV station right next door.
So wait, what, at producers, what were they making? Like
commercials.
Okay.
Commercials, all kinds of commercials. We had high-end clients, big ad agencies.
All right.
You know, were there. So they were...
So regular TV, like
posting
TV
all their real high-end commercials there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some programming too, but mostly commercials.
Right. So that's like a 30-second commercial, like a
yep.
normal commercial. Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you like, what's the difference between working on a commercial like that and working on, I guess, like a movie or like a TV show? Do you, like
very little difference.
Right. Okay.
It's just it's concentrated on telling this story in 30 seconds. And okay. if you're on a movie, it may be, you know, 3-4 months.
Right.
On the set. Commercial maybe 2 days.
Oh, wow.
Jeez. You know, one day in the studio, another day on location.
Right.
You know, and...
You just get all the shots as quick as possible and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you only need 30 seconds worth of stuff, but
right.
when you have these big money agencies, mm-hmm. you know, they have people who just shoot, they specialize in just shooting food.
Right.
So all the food... footage that we worked with Arby's.
Okay.
And Ponderosa Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
All their food stuff was shot in New York.
Okay.
By these big high-end food guys.
Right.
They shoot them on film and, you know, and they would come back and we would put that together. And,
okay.
You know, it was just, and it was trial and error. You learn from the best. And you watch these guys, you really know what they're doing.
Right.
And then after 4 years, I got a break, the TV station, you know, mm-hmm. Channel 13.
Right, which is CBS.
One of the guys came right. down and yeah. said, hey, I'd love to have, I know you can edit it. I know you can shoot. We'd like to have you come up and shoot news. And then it just really blossomed.
Right.
Me. That is the one good thing. Well, there's, I guess there's a few, but the good thing about video production is you don't have to do a pretty much interview again.
Right.
Once you get in, it's just, hey, someone said you can do this. Come on.
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
to the shoot. And then once they,
you either can,
you
do,
can
it
either
you
do it or can't.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And then from there on, you'll get, it's word of mouth. But you don't have to right. apply for anything. You don't have to, you just show up because someone said, right. hey, come on. I mean, different
yeah.
companies.
It's, yeah,
obviously.
It's recommendations.
If you
yeah.
go to production houses, obviously they want to see stuff. But a, right. lot of sports production is which what I'm in and which. Dad has been in for a long time.
Right.
It's yeah. a lot of that. Just, mm-hmm. hey, can you do this? All right, just show up. And then,
yeah,
you go from there.
Yeah. I knew you could do what we need done.
Right.
You know, can you do this?
Right. Blah, blah, blah says you can
and
do
I'll
it.
I'll pay you know. Five times what yeah. anybody else is paying you.
Right.
So I'm in.
When you went from BIM to work at the first place and then in, mm-hmm. like, did you, at BIM, Broadcasting System Maryland, you learned camera and editing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then that's what you were doing.
How like... to switch, how to, you know, run the studio, switcher and lighting and pretty okay. much everything.
Yeah.
It was all inclusive.
And that was just in a year of schooling?
Yeah, it was, actually it's only 600 hours.
Gotcha.
So it was okay. probably 6 or 7 months.
Okay. Oh. And then so at like producers, you said you were started in like in the tape room doing,
yep.
what were you doing? Like
dubs.
What does that mean?
Copy tapes.
Okay.
You know, the commercials, the producers from ad agencies would come in, the commercial would be finished.
Yeah.
And I would make 60 different tapes that would be sent all across the country to go to every outlet to, you know.
Gotcha.
That was before.
I was going to say that's, yeah.
Before linear. I mean, it was non-linear.
Non-linear, right. Right. So, of course, like now. No one's sending tapes around. Like, it's all digital. You just yep. email the file or whatever. It's on, like, a giant server and everyone can have it or whatever. You sell it. But, yeah, that's so you're like, okay. So you're, like, making actual physical copies of tapes to send
yep.
out. That's cool.
1-inch tape, 3/4 tape, beta tape. We would just make 60 or 70 copies. I need 30 of these, 20 of these, you know.
And, and then, so, then, but at Producers, you also did like video and.
Yeah, we had a big studio.
Okay.
There was a big studio there. And
I'm asking because, like you said, that CBS Channel 13, they were like, "Well, I know you can do this and this and this and this." So you must have done all those things at Producers.
Yeah, they saw me working in the studio.
Okay.
Channel 13 did all their promotions there at Producers. They would come to the studio.
Because it was right on the hill.
And they see who's doing what they can do.
Yeah.
And it just sort of went from there.
That's kind of funny that they did their promotions out of like not in house.
Yeah.
A lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's because it's just certain things, like they're news, so they're focusing on news. And they're news shooters. They're going around, they're getting stuff, they're coming back. Quick turnover.
Yeah.
You want stuff that's a little bit more produced, you take it to another house.
Right.
If a sports team wants something a little bit more produced, they take it somewhere else. Like a lot of the teams.
They had paint boxes and they had high-end graphics and things like that that they could add, you know, flashing.
I guess that makes sense, right? You have the, you have the things in-house to do all the stuff to make it look good.
They're specialized. Yeah. It's all, like you said, it's a bunch of different specialized people.
Yeah,
Or shoot it on film.
Right.
But you don't need any.
Yeah, you didn't do that in a newsroom.
Exactly.
It was all tape. It was all, you know, video.
Right.
So
that, and I'll say Dad working at Jay-Z, the first time I ever edited anything was Dad came home with a two tape deck editor. It must have been one of the first, like, movable.
The portable ones, it was a DVC Pro.
And it had two monitors. Uh-huh. It was, like, thick. It's, you know, it's like a foot thick. You lift it up. But I remember Dad letting me, like, as much as it could. He had a couple
wheels.
You're
like, wheels. Do your hands like and you're a DJ. You're like, yeah. Like two wheels, yeah.
But it was shifting it back and making cuts and edits. And it was something to do with horses. I don't know what package you shot. But I remember editing.
Yeah.
And Dad was encouraging me and saying good things. Like, oh, that was right. Whether it was just me doing it.
Yeah, right.
But I remember seeing the cuts I did and then seeing it in the piece on the channel. Like, oh, I edited something. That was cool.
Oh, you actually saw it on
TV. I saw it on TV. I was like, I made that cut. Like the horse, and then the person.
Yeah.
And then another shot of a horse. And I made those cuts. So that was the first editing I ever did.
Yeah, that was at the point where we could take a portable editor and take it on location and cut a news story in a room, in a bedroom, in somebody's kitchen.
Yeah.
You didn't have to be in a truck to do it.
Right.
You know, but we did that to trucks too. I cut in the trucks, but these portable editors were they were wonderful.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, and nowadays.
Now we all have them.
That's, what used to be, when I was there, we had microwave trucks. So you had to have a line of sight that you could see the station, the tower.
Right, the tower.
You know, if you wanted to get a live shot you had to have a satellite truck.
Oh, okay.
And now they have satellite stuff on your backpack.
Right.
Yeah, portable packs. Like, you can be live anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
Maybe in a basement where you can't
somewhere
get a
satellite. Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe.
As anyone who's watched The Art of Craftsmanship live on YouTube might also know that it's not great all the time when I'm shooting live from the basement. I actually did a live stream today on Instagram to show like opening up a box from a
you were outside
from the guy. Yeah, I was outside. But even still, it was like on my phone. I just hit live.
Yep.
And I went live. Like, hey guys, what's up? Here I am. I'm gonna unbox this box and show you the axe that I got. You know.
It's pretty incredible.
I mean, I didn't edit anything together at that point, but I could have, you know, like after I shot it, it was like, do you just want to make this live or what do you want to do with it? I could have edited some stuff and put in some pictures and stuff, and it's crazy.
I was a good editor, you know. I cut a lot of stuff, but I don't do it now.
Right.
It's all, you know, nonlinear, you can cut Devin. He can edit around me now.
Right.
Because it's all online. Yeah.
And that's what you do, Devin, predominantly working for production now, is doing like editing pieces together, right? When you're doing sports.
I mean, it's, first it's replays.
Right.
For whatever, whether it's live broadcast to internet for Loyola or O's in house stuff, O's and Ravens.
Right. But that's editing together, that's replay clips.
Highlights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, every day. you're building,
and that's
you're building
it. A package. There's no time.
And showing it right like away, it. And then it's gone. And it disappears.
And you're building it like in like seconds after it happens.
Yeah, you're constantly like building it just so you don't get behind.
Blah, 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 blah. That's crazy.
It's a good play, and then you have a. You already know I have this highlight and this highlight, so I'll just drop it in.
Yeah,
trim it up.
That. Yeah,
that's wild.
When I first did replays in a truck, I had a one inch tape deck. And if it was a football, I would put an enter mark mm-hmm. on the snap of the ball.
Yeah.
If it's a good play, I'd have to rewind it back to there, re-roll it, and manually spin the wheels with my fingers
right.
to slow it down or speed it up or whatever. So
that's wild.
Now it's all instantly there, and it runs all the time.
Yeah. What's an enter mark?
When you edit, when you make an edit, uh-huh. it's just you hit enter, or that's okay. your mark.
Yeah,
that's right. How you mark your.
So that's
your
spot. And then you push digital, go to
in
go
your
to
timeline.
Your
yeah.
Okay, but that's like a digital mark on your physical tape that it recognizes as like you can go back. It'll
yeah,
go back
it's,
to
it marks it on the time code, okay. not necessarily yep. right on the tape. It goes at this time code. He said he wants to mark it, so right. he goes. The play's done. He hits. Go back to mark.
It'll just
and it goes, and then you can.
It used to go back 5 seconds.
Right.
Because it took 5 seconds to rewind the tape, and it took 5 seconds to get up to speed
right.
to make your next cut.
Right, right.
So now you just do it when you stopped. We ate lunch.
Yeah,
marked
right.
it. That was the mark you put.
Yeah, stop, I just stopped
and
it.
Started and again.
Back up. Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's wild. So Devin, like, when. So, Dad, you worked in production and then, you know, worked for WJZ. And then how'd you get into doing sports production?
I was called by a friend, Jeff. It said, would you be interested in working with the Ravens? We're putting a crew together to make these TV shows. And they'll be live a couple times a week.
Okay.
You know, and Jeff knew me because he worked for another production house mm-hmm. where our competition in the old days. So,
right.
And then when I was at Jay-Z, I needed some production people, and I called Jeff
oh, nice.
From his company to hire him and his crews to work with me when I was promoting. Right. Jay-Z, because I did some promotion stuff for them.
Right.
And I guess in turn, he knew what I could do, and I knew what he could do.
Nice.
And he said, we're putting a crew together, and a big producer wants to put, you know, some top-notch
a good crew
people together.
Right.
And it was the same thing. You know, you didn't put in your resume or anything. It was just like, would you be interested? And I was like, hey, yeah.
Someone said to Jeff, like, get me 4 guys.
Yeah.
And he was like, all right, I got the guys for you.
I got the guys. Exactly. Yeah, right, that's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
That's cool.
Again, be nice to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have to, but it's
well, again, just, I mean, that's what makes working together doable, right? I mean, like, you and I work together on the channel, work during the podcast because we get along. Like, if we didn't get along, mm-hmm. we wouldn't do the YouTube channel. We wouldn't do the podcast. We wouldn't do any of this, you know? Like, so just being, like, even remotely pleasant to most people mm-hmm. is usually, like, enough to, like, move you along. I mean,
sure, don't be a pain in the butt. And just, if you can get your job done, that's, like, it. That's
right.
all you got to do.
Know what you're
it's
doing.
It's your next
yeah.
step up.
Yeah, because that person mm-hmm. knows that they're not going to have to be on top of you to do your job. And they're also not going to have to do, like, figure out any drama with you. Like, we know that if Scott's here, he's going to do his job, he's going to do it well, and he's going to get along with everybody.
Right.
Like, that is, that's gold.
Well, that is also, you know, in, well, Devin knows too, you know, in the broadcasting business, people who work hard and hustle tend to make it better than, even if they don't know everything,
right?
They're willing to learn. If they become a real pain, they're the kind of people you're like, well, if you ask me, here's a crew, I'm not going to recommend the guy that I think is a pain.
Right.
Because it's under my name.
Yeah.
You know, same thing.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
He's recommended
kind of a pain.
Several people that I've worked with, and it was like, these guys are great.
Yeah.
You
right.
know?
Right.
So one of the guys that you had on.
Yeah.
Albert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. That was cool. So then, so you were working with the Ravens, and then... I know you occasionally would work for the Orioles, just kind of filling in occasionally if they needed guys. But I know that you said that the pay wasn't great for the Orioles, so you didn't really work all there that often. So then, Devin, you went to film school. I know you were interested in film, like, growing up, and, like, I guess some of that was Dad introduced you to different stuff. And then, so what, like, is that what, I don't know, like, what's the connection between what Dad did? I guess just his interest in it maybe got you into it, or maybe was it something separate that got you into it? Or
no, I remember, like, the editing thing and having cameras around, right? Okay. So then when I was a kid, right, I was constantly making movies and stuff. That was, like, my hobby. I'd get you guys in it and do stuff. And I'd ask Dad to... I remember one time I shot a... It wasn't even... Okay, so in middle school, there's a project, like a World War II. You had to write a, like, a thesis or something. I don't know what it was, but you had to write this whole multiple-page thing for World War II.
Right. Report.
And I decided to just make a movie. So I shot it with my friends.
Nice.
And then it was like a day before it was due. And of course I asked Dad, I'm like, can you like edit it? Go to work and edit it? He's like, no, I'm not editing. No, no. And eventually he said, all right, fine. he did great. He added gunshots and stuff. And it was like this really cool World War II thing. And I brought it into school. And at the time you could connect all the TVs in middle school. Right, and they were all connected to a VHS player in the office, and they would play it. So the whole school saw my World War II.
Dang, nice.
And then my teacher was so upset. He's like, what was that? That had nothing to do with anything. You know, I was just, this movie I made, he was so upset. But it was great.
That's like, great. That's so funny.
From there, everyone would come to me like, that was awesome. Like, that movie you made was great.
Nice.
It was your middle school Emmy.
Yeah, right. So I had that, and just Dad, I remember, like, which I tell people all the time, taking a photo, he would say, fill the frame.
Yeah.
So simple, but so many people don't do it. Like, hey, you line up, and they just, like,
give a lot of
you know,
space,
too much headroom. Yeah. It's like, what are you doing? Walk up. Get close to them. If two people want a picture, unless you're at Disney World and the castle's in the background.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Come up on the two people.
Yeah.
Fill the frame. Yeah. And you shot so much better. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I went to film school. Another thing, I don't know if it was a mix of Dad, Mom. I remember watching 2001 on the TV in high school. Yeah. And Dad going like, oh, watch this.
Yeah.
This is important. This is good. This is a good one.
Yeah.
And like me, like watching the whole thing like amazed, like 2001, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then also Mom saying like, oh, you love movies. You know, you can do that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
And then going to film school and then being in film school and then going back to New York. And then I think Dad saying like, well, if you want to come back, I can probably get you a job. Doesn't pay much, but you can probably work for the O's.
Right.
And I think by then I was ready to come home. So I was just like, yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, right. Just, yeah, consistent job.
Yeah.
So as you were talking about that, as you're talking about making movies, it just came back to my mind. I'm not sure why I didn't think about it, but when we were kids on the farm, Dad, you would make movies us. Of kids, we did Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, we did.
And what was the other? Home Alone.
Home Alone.
And Home Alone. Uh-huh. So we had our own home movies.
That's true.
So versions of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
There was that as a base, too.
Yeah. And, like, there was, I guess, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, like, there's the part where you're making the device or whatever, and then you're, like, in a lab. And, Devin, I remember you're under the table blowing on the hose to put bubbles inside.
You can hear me, like, I was five, you know.
Freezing. The good old days.
That was that all done on just a VHS recorder?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that for BIM or just for fun?
No, that was just for fun.
See? Yeah.
That's when you said we had the cameras around.
And that was no cuts. That was
all in camera cuts.
I shot it. It was all in camera.
Yeah, right. How we would do it too. Like, that's go. It. That's the take.
Next. Yeah.
One take.
And must be nice. Props for Drew.
Yeah.
When he went to his school and he had to edit something together.
Yeah.
That was another time when I realized what editing was. He was like, "Oh, we'll just do it again." I was like, "But we just shot like I messed it up. That's it though. We got to move on." He's like, "Well, I'll cut it and then I'll cut back and forth through like there was a scene. It was like the old joke thing like there's a bunch of doors and people are chasing back and forth through them,
right.
But they pop out of different doors.
Right.
It's just
go in one door, come out a different door.
But Drew was trying to do that skit. And I was like, well, but I ran from here. Like, they'll know. He's like, I'll just cut it. Like, I'll edit it. And, you know, if, as long as the camera stays still.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like a snap. I was like, editing. Okay. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I was just thinking about those. And do we, I guess we have those tapes somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I still have them.
So funny.
They're in a box. Yeah,
maybe we should put them on the channel.
We should.
They should. We should put them on some kind of.
We'll put them on the autocrat.
Thumb drives something, because the oxide will fall off the tapes eventually.
Right, yeah. I guess, yeah. Is there any place? I mean, I know there are places, but like,
we need
to like convert from VHS to digital. Yeah. Is that something we could do easily? We just send out a VHS tape? What do you, like, how do you say, how do you ensure that you're not going to like lose it for good?
Well, there's companies that do it. You just, you can send them boxes. Right. There are places locally that you can take it and physically take it to them.
Yeah, that's, I know, I feel like that's something that you don't want to like send away, because like, if it gets lost in the mail, you're done. That's like, that's it, you know? That's what I'm saying. Like, how do you like...
Or we just spend whatever, $100 and get
some VHS. It probably costs you a couple $100 and have it all converted.
You can have VHS, like VHS player out, converted to like a USB in. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, just record on your...
Buy that, That would be great. We should just put that on the channel. Like it's a normal video. Be like, and like it, we'll like shoot a new thumbnail for it. Like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, making of, and then like just have that.
Making a movie.
Making a movie.
I have some other format stuff. So though I have some stuff that was beta. I have some DVC Pro.
Yeah.
Commercials that you guys were in.
Yeah.
Drew was in.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, I could probably convert it all. I have stuff from 9/11, when I worked at the Pentagon, those 4 days, which was, I saved a bunch of stuff that I shot there.
I don't remember. What did you do? I don't remember. He was down there.
Well, the day that it happened, the plane went in the Pentagon, they sent me right away with a satellite truck.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I spent 4 days down there shooting just carnage packages of very patriotic stuff.
Yeah, you know? Right.
That's crazy. Pretty moving.
Yeah.
A lot of tapes of that.
Yeah.
And you also have old, was it 8mm or 16? It's probably 8. From when you were in college in Frostburg.
That was 8mm.
Remember that?
Yeah. Chasing the cows and stuff.
That was the funniest set of
That was videos. The five-legged cow. And it's just, you know.
Mom pulled up. She was like, I'm going to, for Dad's birthday or something.
Yeah.
She's going to transfer all these college film.
8mm films.
I remember thinking, like, is this a good idea? Because, like, I don't think, maybe she said she didn't watch it. Oh, and I don't think she did, because do you remember the one?
One where they were smoking marijuana.
There was a shot of them 70s. Up in Frostburg in the mountain, just smoking. Dad's like, sue me.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, what do you expect?
And then one of them chasing cow, but it was just funny.
That was funny, the chasing cows.
There's no way I would just... If Caitlin was like, hey, I got a bunch of college footage. Well, we got to check it first.
Yeah, we should really look at it.
See what's going on.
It wasn't so bad.
It was actually really tamed.
Right. Yeah. Compared to, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's so funny. Nice. So, yeah. So all that, you know, is now we're here. And Devin, you are the reason why the Art of Craftsmanship exists, you know, or the reason why we made it into what it is, because you said to me, like, hey, I'm, you know, you're always making stuff and YouTube is there and people are putting up really crappy videos and getting lots and lots of views. So why don't we, you were like, I want to try to keep making movies, cause I'm not really doing it that much anymore. Or keep making video and stuff.
Do something
and keep
good.
Your chops up. And why not? Why don't we, you know, try it out. I'll come over and hang out in the shop and I'll just shoot you making stuff. And there you go. There was a comment that came on our videos today, I think, that someone said, they said, this is the best knife making video I've ever seen on our very first video ever shot.
That's nice.
I was like, man, all right.
See the rest of
them. Right, exactly.
For a tree,
you know what you're doing. It's good quality stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. And when I look back at that video, I mean, obviously there's things that we've changed and we've gotten better at, but
patting myself on the back, it seemed pretty natural. Like I didn't seem, and I think that's also because it was you and me shooting together, right? So yeah. It was like you were giving me good direction. It's just like me talking to you, and it's always felt that way. It's never felt really like, of course, I understand that I'm talking to the audience, and I do try to like, you know, get, I have that in my mind, but it's a lot easier because I'm talking to you in the shop. And so, you know, that was pretty cool, you know, being like looking back and seeing that video and be like, oh, it was like pretty natural on camera. Maybe yeah. That's just from a lifetime of working around people who are, you know, who did, you know, or not a lifetime, but, you know, half the lifetime of working around, you know, people who do that type of stuff and, you know, think about composition and think about art and think about, you know, quality and, you know, how do you put all that stuff together and to make a product that people will want to see. And yeah, it's been cool.
We're still here, whether they want to see it or not.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I think it's great. I'm real proud of what you do, and I think it's fantastic work, you know?
Yeah.
You do a great job as a host. He does a great job shooting it and editing, mm-hmm. and all in all, it really is a really nice product.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, and I mean, I've seen a lot, and it's high-quality stuff.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
And you're my boys, so, yeah. You know, that's cool, too. Makes it even better.
I went to, I went down to the, what's it, the Joppa Flea Market again recently and saw that guy, the tall Russian guy who was there. I can't remember his name, and if you listen to the podcast, great. I'm sorry I can't remember your name, but I know. But he, well, we went one time, and he recognized me. He's like, hey, Art of Craftsman, he was talking to me. And then you were there, so he was talking mm-hmm. to you. He was like, I love your son's work. Blah, 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 blah. Like, they should go full time. You know, like, oh, yeah, that'd be nice. But
he took a selfie with you when he was there.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, you're the father of him? I need a selfie with you, too. Said, okay.
That's great. That's been fun. Cool. All right, Dad. So at this point, we like to ask all of our guests a disaster story. And I know we prompted you. We didn't give you a ton of heads up before we started. But if you could think of a story, something that you've done or made or were in the middle of where you were working on it and it just completely failed. And I know you've done lots of things and you've made lots of things and you worked in different situations and, you know, we've built decks and we've built buildings and, you know, you've done finer woodworking and cabinetry and all sorts of stuff. But, do you have a disaster story that the listeners can just really feel like they're part of, all of us who fail at some point in making things? 'Cause no one's perfect. So, yeah.
Golly, I mean, I don't know if I have one big mm-hmm. disaster thing.
Oh, must be nice.
I think it's you know, like you say, everybody has some.
Yeah.
There may be a lot of small mm-hmm. stories, you know, that you really don't think about and they just happen.
Right.
I'm not sure from it. Yeah. There was anything like nothing blew up or destroyed a building or right, anything right. quite that
what about,
horrendous.
What about the tire one, the big tire?
Oh, well, that happened to me, yeah. That was just more of an hurt.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a disaster.
Yeah, I was working for another one of my jobs. Pardon me. Good beer. I was working for Goodyear. And I worked on what was called the A2 truck, which was off-road equipment, mm-hmm. working on big tires, tractors, loaders, things like that.
So what's the size? They're like 6 feet high, big, real big tires.
The tire that got me, yeah, it was an articulating loader. We were taking it off of a piece of equipment. It had a big cut in it. We had to replace a tire.
Right.
And I was working with another guy. I was knocking the rings off of it and getting it off the... you know, off of the wheel itself. I broke everything free and had it ready to go. And we had these big, like a little crane on the yep. on the truck that would put hooks on the thing and pull the thing and hit it around the outside and squirt it with water, whatever, to get the
right.
get the tire
get
off.
The tire off the wheel.
And right. I had walked around and I said, "Hold on, don't do anything. I'm walking between the tire and the truck." And the guy who was working the boom. Pulled it and the tire cut loose and got me. And just pinched my arm between the truck and the tire. And the tire probably weighed 600 pounds.
Right.
You know, so it just snapped my arm like a twig. Oh. And it was ugly.
Ooh.
There was a few expletives flying.
Jeez. How'd they pull it off?
It just bounced right off of my arm. Just went boom.
So it hit you and then you moved your arm.
Yeah. I just pulled it out and it was broken then.
Oh.
You know, in three places, you know.
Was that on your like forearm, wrist area?
That was both arm bones and part of my wrist.
Oh,
so radius, the ulna, and whatever in your thumb.
Yeah, right.
There, so,
oh man, that's rough.
Yeah. I think that was the first time you saw your mother saw me cry. I came back and they put a cast on it.
Yeah,
and it got swollen inside the cast.
Oh, right.
And I was laying, they gave me some pain stuff, but I could have ate the whole bottle of them. It didn't do anything
because
I was crying.
Right.
And mom was there just hugging me. And
right.
I think we were just so basically still just dating.
Oh, man.
And, you know, she was feeling sorry for me the whole night. And I was just, I just remember crying to her, and she felt so bad for me crying.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, of course.
Tough guy, huh? Yeah. Well, yeah. I cried like a baby on that. It hurt.
Oh, swollen inside. Oh, and cast.
Terrible.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's nothing that you really did. It was just, it happened to you.
Oh, right. I did cut my knee that one time with a chainsaw.
Oh, that was on you.
Cutting down.
That was on you.
That was on me. Yeah, I just cutting down a tree and. Not a big tree.
That was a trimmer. That was a...
No, it was a chainsaw.
Was it a chainsaw?
Chainsaw, yeah. It was a straight tree against the house. It probably only maybe 4 or 5 inches, you know, across.
Right, yeah.
But I was on my knees cutting it, and the chainsaw went through and zoop, right in the... And it stalled in my knee. And, you know.
Yeah, that's... I still get the willies. Sometimes. Just growl. Working a chainsaw, I'm very like hesitant.
Yeah,
it's just so crazy. You all have to
it was ugly.
It's like a lightsaber. You brush it against your skin, you're done.
Yeah, right.
So I always have that in the back of my head, and
like I say, I got plenty of little ones now. Add up.
I think you and I were cutting down something when we were making a fence. I forget where we were putting up a fence, and we were working a chainsaw. And I was just like, I don't know about all this.
Yeah. Oh, Bob's.
Probably Bob's.
Bob Rowley's.
Yeah. Got his chainsaw out. And we're cutting. And it's, you know, you're like usually up on a ladder doing stuff. You know, you're pushing hard and you're just thinking, I'm here. If it goes through a little bit quick.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. There's always that moment of hesitation where you're like, what are all the things that could go wrong in this situation? You hope you account for them all and you check off the list, you know, like, and then it's sometimes like, it just happens. You're like, oh, there's the thing that I didn't think was going to happen.
Very quick.
Yeah. I just thought about like 3 or 4 other ones, but I'll let it go.
Well, that's what you said, right? There are like a lot of little ones of like things that happen over the years.
Yeah, they all come back to you real quick.
Yeah, right. All the pain comes flooding back. Yeah. Well, I know that like we didn't have any big accidents, but just working, you know, cutting down the bush outside, and we're like using the sawzall and then hacking up with the like the axes and stuff, and there's always just like the chance, you know, of something crazy happens, but I guess that's half the fun too.
It's danger.
Oh, God bless you. Half of the fun of the adrenaline rush of what it is, you know, you feel the power of a chainsaw, like, you know, that of course it's like it has the potential to be completely ruinous, you know, that's what its job is, right. Is to cut through stuff. So I think that's why majority of Sawyers are men, right? Because there's something with testosterone and that level of danger.
Well, yeah, we're all dumb enough to do
it. Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, I'll be fine. Yeah.
Women are like, I'm not using that. See, probably hurt yourself.
That's the difference between us and women.
Right, exactly.
Women say, well, we'll just hire somebody to do that.
Someone dumb.
That's why they live longer, right. As we know.
All right, well, what do we think? We got ready for some recommendations, Dev. Do you think of anything?
Yeah, I just in general, the Meat Eater channel, they have a bunch of side videos on YouTube, like Canadian Angler, and they've got a food show, and they're producing so much good stuff. Other than Meat Eater season 11,
right,
which right now is only on their website, which is disappointing. So I don't want to watch their show on my cell phone.
Right. Yeah.
And I can share it to my TV, which is where I would like to watch it, but it's like a lower quality. And that annoys me. Mm. It's like this beautiful show. They're in like Alaska and Montana, and it's this great thing, but it's like, it's crappy quality when I cast it to the TV. So, but they've got so many good other shows on Meat Eater. Just look them up on YouTube and really good stuff.
Nice. Right on. My recommendation this week is Don Nguyen Knives. Don is an awesome knife maker and he has a YouTube channel. I actually just watched one of his videos today and I'd seen it before, but it's I can't think of the name of it right off the top of my head, but it's about making a minimalist handle for a knife. So he's already made the knife and he's just designing the handle and talking about how do you design a handle to go with a knife. You know, if the knife is really simple, then you have to have a handle that has a little bit more detail to it. And thinking about, we were shooting a video today on like adding liners, you know, like to a handle, a liner isn't particularly necessary, but it adds something else to the handle that's not just wood against metal. You add some color and a pop of something or metal or whatever it is. So he goes through and he's like kind of drawing out the handle, which is really interesting, and he draws a few different versions of it, and some are more detailed and some are less detailed and some have different facets and curves and things. And so it's just an interesting way to look at a part of knife making that a lot of people don't think about, which is how important the handle is with the knife when you have those two things together. And just looking at the sheep shear knives that we just finished, and how like the reason why I made the sheep shear knives was because I had seen a few different people make them, and I wasn't happy with any of the handles that I had seen from other people. A lot of people put like a big chunky thing on the end, and it was just, they just didn't have this kind of elegance that I thought that they needed. So then I started playing around and designing a different type of handle, and then found something that I thought was nice.
Which you mentioned in the newest video.
Yeah.
You're like, I didn't like anyone. So this is what I did. At the end, you're like, I used the take where you were like, you're talking about it and you're like, I really love the handle design, but then you made like a yeah face. Like, well, I did it. I came up with it.
That's the whole point.
I love the handle design.
Well, I did. And in the video, you see the one drawing of the handles that I did, which turned out really nice. And I, you know, that was the final drawing, but I had worked through a bunch of different drawings and I had an idea of what I wanted, but really it was like, I knew it had to have a certain like elegance to it, because the way the handle is, it's got this history of being a sheep shear thing. So it's a really kind of aggressive thing. And so I knew it had to have some kind of simple geometry and some like facets to go with some curves and things. So, but Don does a good job of talking through that process, in a really interesting way. So check out Don Nguyen Knives on, Instagram and also on YouTube.
There you go.
Yeah. And Dad, we sprung that on this recommendation thing on you today, but do you have anything?
You know, I recommend that folks, not necessarily anything new, maybe go back, watch some old black and white shows, because it was family, fun, good morals, and just funny stuff, you know. Burns and Allen, Andy Griffith, just stupid, funny little shows. But there was always something funny about them, and they were well made. And if you haven't gone back and looked at some old black and white shows, some of them are just, you know, my wife and I do it a lot, and we have more belly laughs looking at, you know, Barney Fife than,
right,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Not necessarily Gomer or something like that, but just good, fun, clean entertainment.
Andy Griffith.
It's good stuff.
And it, actually, like, it's one of the shows that I really like. It's an older one. It's actually kind of bridged the gap, but is the Last of the Summer Wine, which is a BBC show, and it was one of the longest running sitcoms. I think like The Simpsons has surpassed it now, but it was like 30 years, and it went from, you know, the early 70s up until the 90s, and just watching some of that stuff and seeing like how it's filmed and how it's like the interesting way that they do shots, and then also how they edit things together, but then
all that on top of how relevant some of the issues that they deal with then are the same issues we deal with now, just different time period. And it's how you deal with them in different ways. Right. So
it's like the time machine is there. It's like it's gone around full circle.
Yeah, and I'll see, especially with that show, I'll see like funny edits, like sitcom edits, the way they edit something together where you're like really close up on, or then they're really far away, but you hear the audio like they're close to you and like things like that. Then I see that in more, you know, in like contemporary shows. I'm like, oh, that's, you know, just something that they've done throughout the years, and they probably got it from someone else, and like from the original movies, you know, like it all goes back together. So that's cool.
Good old stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, usually I would have someone tell all of our listeners where they could find them on social media, but, you know, other than Facebook, I think, you know, like you follow there, but,
you can find him on our channel.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Check out the Smithy build. You can see our dad there, and, and this will be here as well. And maybe we'll put up some of those videos, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or Home Alone.
Yeah. That would be fun.
That would be awesome. All right, everybody. Well, thank you all so much for listening. You can always head over to patreon.com/theoutercraftsmanship if you want to support us further for the channel and for the podcast. Also, we are still making some of our top 5 comments/questions videos. So if you are interested in participating in them and you have a question you want to ask, you can always drop a question in those comments of the videos. But if you head over to patreon.com and you become a patron there, you can join us in the Discord and you can ask questions and we'll answer those there as well. So it's a fun community. We've had a good time kind of communicating with those, the patrons on Discord, and giving them little, like, you know, more behind the scenes stuff, more snippets of what's happening, and become kind of a little community, which is really nice. So, you know, you guys can always help us out over there. And then also you go over to YouTube and check out our videos there, subscribe, like, comment, all the good stuff.
Sheepshear knife.
Hit the bell. Yeah. Yeah. Sheepshear knives are coming out, or they came out today. Today is Wednesday.
So they'll be,
this is done. It's already out. If you listen to this on Friday,
views by then.
Yeah.
So.
Right. It's doing pretty well right now, which is good. But yeah, head over to YouTube and follow us there, subscribe, and let us know what you think about all the videos. We really appreciate it. And then you can also follow us on Instagram @TheArtOfCraftsmanship and @TheArtOfCameraGuy. Get a little bit more behind the scenes and see what's happening. See all the beers I've been drinking for the 24 beers of Christmas Advent. That's been fun. I feel like I turned into like a beer advocate guy on there. I'm like, I got to start putting some other stuff.
Get back to the real stuff.
Dad, it was a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dad.
Dad, thank you.
It was a pleasure. Everybody else, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.